Good morning. My name is Arturo, and this is the Morning Meditation Podcast. Today's meditation is called The Labyrinth, about the 1986 Jim Henson movie. This is part three of the Poetic Movie Review series, and I want to talk about masculinity and femininity. I see these themes in this movie. There's a lot to this movie. It's really good. It's a very complex movie, and there's so much that you could explore. There's fan theories out there, there's art appreciation, there's pages on that, there's videos on that, there's the whole theme of mythology, there's the good and evil thing, there's tons of things that you could explore with this movie, but I'm going to explore masculinity and femininity, because my theory is that Sarah, the main character, is youthful femininity. That is what she represents in the movie. And what happens is she goes on this adventure and she meets all different kinds of masculinity along the way. But I think that the movie failed in one sense, in that it didn't include one of the characters that is paramount in masculinity. And we're going to talk about that and what happened from there. But we start from the beginning. We see Sarah reciting a play in the park, and she's dressed up for this play, and she's by herself, and she's reading from the playbill. And it's interesting because we see that she's very imaginative. We see that she's really tied to fantasy. When they show her room, we can see the origins of that, in that she's got lots of books and lots of toys and fantasy things, and so she is familiar with like mythologies and stories and those kinds of things, and it really works with her imagination. And so I think she's supposed to be longing for the relationship she had with her mom in the movie. Her mom had passed away, and so now she's got a stepmom and doesn't quite get along with her. And the rub in this movie is that she has to babysit her little brother Toby, and she doesn't want to. And so once we get to the point where she is babysitting him, he's crying and just being fussy. And so she wishes for him to be taken away by the Goblin King, which is part of the story she was reading at the beginning. And so it really happens. We don't know if this is all in her mind or if this is really happening to her. There's lots of theories on that. There's lots to explore. But what ends up happening is this Goblin King from this fantasy land takes away the child, her little brother, and the little goblins come and get him. And so then she's confronted by Jareth, the Goblin King. And so he's human, or human-ish, I guess. It might be that he's supernatural, that has some different kind of characteristics that are not human, but he comes and confronts her and tells her that, you know, you wished for this and I took him, and if you want him back, you're going to have to go through the labyrinth. So she goes to this world where there's a labyrinth. And so with this whole theme of masculinity and femininity, she's youthful femininity, full of energy, full of imagination, full of just desire for life, to go out and be free and to live her own life. And so the first masculine character that she encounters is Jareth, who represents the worst type of masculinity, which is selfish, arrogant, a bully, someone who kind of has a power trip. And he has certain powers, but he has powers over lesser beings called goblins. And so he doesn't live in the human world where he has to work and make something of himself. He lives in a fantasy world where he just speaks and he commands these lesser powers to do his bidding for him. And so I think that he represents a selfish masculine person, someone who doesn't have real power, as we find out at the end of the movie, but somebody who uses magic and trickery to fool somebody, especially a youthful feminine figure like Sarah. So, and he takes the child. The thing that he wants is to be close to Sarah. And so he does this this childish thing, like little boys that hit little girls to try to get their attention. And, you know, the mom will always tell the little girl, oh, that means he likes you. And so Jareth is doing this kind of thing to where he's using something else, something negative, to try to gain attention from a young girl. If you really get into like the age, like how old Jareth is and how old Sarah is, kind of get into some problems with being attracted to someone that young and actually taking actions towards that. We're not going to get into that here, but he represents something bad and something really bad. And then, so she goes into the labyrinth. She decides, you know, Toby's worth it. I have to get him back. No matter what happens to me, this is necessary. And so she goes on this adventure. And one of the first characters that she runs into is the worm. This little worm with funny looking hair, with a funny little voice. And he's actually kind of cute. And I think every person that I've heard talk about him just is in love with this little character. He has a little British accent, and he has a conversation with Sarah. And I think that this little worm represents a grandfather figure, the masculine person who is older and wiser, somebody from another time, doesn't quite fit into Sarah's world. He's in the fantasy world, but what she sees is that he's harmless. He's too small to cause any kind of harm. He's kind of funny looking and has funny looking hair. I mean, we find that the older, you know, separated generations from us, you know, our parents are very close to us when we're growing up. They're right there. But the grandparent is somebody who's far away. And I see him as a grandfather figure in that he cares for her. He's friendly towards her. He invites her in. And when she asks for directions and help, he gives her directions that would take her somewhere safe. Now, she's trying to go to the dangerous place to get her brother back. But his concern is not what she wants. His concern is her safety. And so he sends her the other way. And in the movie, it can be kind of frustrating. But the reality is that he represents something. Something otherworldly. Something older. And that's just my take on it. I don't think I've ever heard anybody else see it that way, but that's what he reminds me of in the masculine world. The next person she runs into is Hoggle. Now, Hoggle's kind of a grumpy guy, and he is what I would consider in the masculine world the worker. He's a working man. He doesn't have time for conversation. He doesn't have time for Sarah and her questions. He's going about his business. You know, she finds him working. And he's like, what would you call that? Fumigating the little fairies. And she doesn't know, but the fairies are kind of like pests in this world. But Hoggle tries to get rid of her. He doesn't want to talk to her. And she's asking for help, and he doesn't want to help her. And he's kind of tied to the Goblin King, we find out later on. But I think that's what he represents, is the working man, the man who doesn't have time for nonsense. He doesn't have time for other people. He's about his business, and he's kind of grumpy because maybe he's involved in the drudgery of the work. Maybe he's tired of his job, and that's the kind of reaction you get from a person like that. You know, like, I have to be about my business, and I'm getting tired of this, and just the whole world irritates me. That's kind of what I see with Hoggle. And then along the way, she runs into other characters. It's later in the movie, but she runs into the Fieries, which are those red figures that are kind of crazy and dancing around and singing a song and trying to challenge her. But one of the things about them is that their heads come off and their eyes come out. And so they're like tossing their heads around and everything. And so what I see there is, you know, the crazy guy. Because crazy guys exist in the masculine world. There's guys that lose their head and they don't even care about it. In fact, their desire is for Sarah to lose her head too, to join them in their craziness. We find that in the masculine world, that there's some guys that, you know, they're not going to benefit you in any way. And sometimes it's attractive just to be around the action. But in the end, you're going to lose your head, and that's not good. She realizes that, and she runs away from them. She also runs into the wise men, And the wise man sits there and just kind of pontificates. He's the intellectual. He's the one who sometimes could be full of himself just because of his intellect. And so he kind of speaks in riddles, but he also has a hat that will criticize him and correct him. And there's always somebody in your life that's going to do that. And I think anybody who is too full of themselves needs a balance. So she runs into this person and he helps her along eventually, but she has to figure out the riddles and find a way to talk to him where she can get information out of him. She also runs into Ludo. Ludo is this huge puppet guy. He's a kind of a monster with big horns and, looks very, very intimidating, but in reality, he is, very caring and very gentle. And so I see him as the gentle giant, and they exist. There are guys out there who are just really, really big, and yet they have a really soft heart. That's a good friend to have, and she finds that Ludo becomes a good friend for her in that he's able to help her along as she's going looking for Toby. The gentle giant is somebody that you find in life, but not every giant is gentle. Some of them are dangerous and rough, but to find the gentle giant is a good thing if you can befriend him, and along your journey, he'll be helpful. And that's somebody who either is physically big or is just big in personality, in ability, in some way they have a giantness about their personality, about their existence. But you'll find in your journey in life that a gentle giant can be a good friend. And that's what she finds in Ludo. And then, what are the other masculine characters? I think that's pretty much everything that I see as far as, the masculine characters that she runs into. I may have been missing one. I think she only runs into one feminine character, which is the trash lady, and I don't remember her name, but she's a hoarder, and she tries to get Sarah off the path by focusing on her things, and so she kind of gets away from her. But in this movie, she runs into all these different masculine figures, the negative stereotypical ones, the ones that are evil and wicked and selfish and are trying to manipulate and use you, trying to trick you and trying to get over on you through trickery instead of trying to build a relationship with you and maybe get something from you through relationship. Instead, they're like, no, I just want what I want. I don't want to have a relationship with you. I don't want to grow in conversation with you. I want to use you and take things from you. And that's what I see with Jareth. You have the worm with the grandfather figure. You have the worker with Hoggle and Ludo, the gentle giant, all these different characters, the crazy guys and the wise men. But there's somebody missing. There's one character that I see specifically that is missing in this movie, because Sarah's going through this, all this labyrinth, this maze with twists and turns and surprises around every corner, which I hadn't even mentioned, but that's what the movie's about. But what she has one goal in mind. She's trying to get her brother back from Jareth, the Goblin King, the bad guy. And so this is kind of a princess fairy tale. She's the princess, and the Jareth is the big bad wolf, or the evil emperor, you might call him. He is the antagonist in the movie. And the goal that she has in this adventure is to get her brother back. But the guy that's missing, the masculine character that's missing here, is Prince Charming. Now, the story was written to be kind of a fantasy, kind of rooted in all kinds of lore and stories and different things. But in the story of life, we see in fairy tale movies that there is a Prince Charming that comes, somebody who comes and helps, somebody who comes and saves, somebody who's attractive, somebody who has desire for you, but is willing to tie himself to you. And Prince Charming is the one who's going to be the husband. He's the one who's going to be a lifelong partner. He's the one you're going to ride off with and live happily ever after. That's the normal basis of a fairy tale, is that eventually this youthful feminine character is going to meet a youthful masculine character with lots of energy and lots of ability, but also a strong connection of relationship. So the typical fairy tale fantasy, the princess is in the tower and Prince Charming has to find her and go and rescue her from the tower and take her past the dragons and off to a kingdom where they live happily ever after. So what does that represent? The princess, the father has put her in the tower. What does that mean? It means that her father thinks that she is very, very worthy, so he elevates her. He has elevated her, and she needs to be protected. Children all need to be protected, but in particular, young girls need to be protected because of some of the masculine characters that are out there that are not good. So generally, a father's job is to protect his daughter from bad guys. That's a big thing. But yet also, he's supposed to teach her that she's valuable. And so in the story, he elevates her, he puts her in a tower, and he isolates her because of the dragons that are out there. What do the dragons represent? They represent every kind of danger. Winged creatures like birds that can come and attack. Serpents, which are snakes, which are obviously dangerous. You know, the lizard, which is sneaky and can come around and has claws and all those kinds of things. He breathes fire, which, you know, there's natural disasters that are dangerous out there. So the dragon represents so much. And I kind of got that from Jordan Peterson. I love his description of what a dragon is. It represents every kind of danger, but they're out there. All of those dangers are in the world, and we all could use some protection from them, or at least a warning that they exist so that we can fight them off. So the princess is in the tower. She's been elevated by her father. She's been put in a protected place. And the prince is supposed to come and find her and rescue her. So what does that represent? The fact that, one, she's worthy. She's worthy of him. She's worthy of his attention. She's worthy of his life, because this man is going to put his life, take his life into his own hands to come and rescue her. He's going to face the dragons and go past the moat and climb the tower. He's doing a lot of work. He's putting himself at risk, and he is realizing that her elevated position is rightful, and that his goal in life is to conquer all of these things and to gain relationship with her. And so he's supposed to come and rescue her and take her past all of these dangers again and into the fairy tale land of happily ever after, a place where now through relationship they can live forever and just be happy and have a family and all of those kinds of things. But that's missing from this movie. That's the one character that's not there. It's an essential element of a fairy tale. And maybe this movie's not a fairy tale. Maybe it's more of a Greek mythology. Maybe it's more of a serious type of movie, not a children's fantasy book from childhood, you know. But that's what I see is missing here. And I heard a really good line in a movie. The movie's called Not Easily Broken. And the narrator is talking, and he says that men are no longer heroes anymore, that there was a time where men would go out and fight and be the hero of the women, you know, of the woman, you know, kind of like in the fairy tale land, or kind of in old times when life was much more dangerous than it is now. Now we're more settled down. And so the line that he says is that men are no longer heroes, and women have had to become their own heroes. And we kind of see that in the labyrinth, that Sarah has to be her own hero. She doesn't have a Prince Charming to lean on. She doesn't have that masculine representation in her life. And maybe she will later on. Maybe that's, you know, this is only part of the story. But she has to be her own hero. She's the one that has to fight this fight. And she becomes empowered through the movie. And at the end, kind of like the Wizard of Oz, she realizes that she's had the power all along. And so she embraces that and she takes it. And she recites a line from the play that she was reading at the beginning. You have no power over me. You know, I have the power. I have the authority. I don't remember exactly how she says it, but that's what she tells Jareth. And she takes her brother back. And so she wins the day. But she has become her own character. And female empowerment, I think, is a good thing. I love it. I have a daughter and I try to lead her on that path all the time. And she has grown into her own, and she has faced a lot of things as well. And so I think female empowerment is really, really good. I wouldn't want my daughter or my wife or my mother, for that sake, to just be completely dependent on a masculine figure. You know, you have to do some things yourself, and that's great. But having a partner in life, I think, is really, really good. And I think that's what's missing from this movie. And there was a reason why this movie didn't make big bucks. And I don't know what it is, but I wonder sometimes if maybe it's an incomplete story because it's missing this one element. Just my own personal thoughts, kind of an aside. But this is the Morning Meditation Podcast. Thank you for listening.